Hello, and welcome to Reincarnated as Podcasters, the show where we explore the countless and varying worlds of isekai, the anime genre. This is episode 18. It's no understatement to say that isekai is an extremely prevalent genre in the anime landscape. On this show, we hope to find out why that is, and what a genre primarily concerned with other worlds has to say about this one. Today, we will be discussing episodes 12 to 14 of ReZero, Starting Life in Another World. But before we embark on this intrepid journey, let me introduce you to the hosts of this program. I'm Vicky, and joining me, as always, is Lawrence. Hello, Lawrence.
Hey, konnichiwa, Vicky-san.
How are you doing? It's been a while since we've done this.
Yeah, it's been a minute. I'm feeling all right. I'm doing good. I'm feeling well rested. It's a weekend. Got my exercise in. Got a hot cup of tea in front of me. I couldn't be doing better. Now that I'm seated and ready to talk about some anime. That's a Sunday for you.
Yeah, that's a good Sunday.
How about yourself? How you been?
Yeah, pretty good. Same really. I've done nothing this weekend, so I'm feeling chill. I've also got a cup of tea. I'm also very excited to talk about some anime, so we're on the same page.
yeah. Let the anime chats commence. I'm excited. It's been so long. I've forgotten the rhythm of things. But I'll set us up on the right foot. By talking about some of the shit I've been watching lately, because I've been watching some shit. I've got like a little sample size here, just a little selection. But I need to talk about some of this stuff.
Okay, go ahead.
Let me start off. Where do I start? Yeah, so I've been watching Gundam Seed, which is like a Gundam series. Produced in like early 2000s, and that really put me off of anime for a minute, I think, because it was so fucking bad. Yeah, it's just a trash show. It's the lowest common denominator kind of like teen wish fulfillment fantasy that takes all of the worst lessons from previous Gundam series and mashes them all together, adds like a dusting of sexism and eugenics, and it's just bad in a big way.
And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and I'm just sort of like forcing my way through it because I'm like doing this chronological rewatch of Gundam, as I've said, and I'm like, gotta do it, gotta make it, gotta watch all of them, and I just pushed myself too far, I think. but clearly I learned nothing because I started reading this manga called Solo Leveling, and
Sam is reading that also, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned you've been talking about it.
I put Sam on that because I had to share the burden of like the stupidity of this manga with someone. I don't know. It's also like just a power fantasy turned up to 11, where weak people are stupid and stupid people are useless. Like throw them in the trash. Only the strong survive. And the way you become strong is like through sheer force of will and blessing from some sort of higher being. It's about a guy who is weak and sad and useless, suddenly becomes extremely powerful in this setting where, like, in our world, portals to monster dimensions open up or whatever the fuck. the world building is just piss poor, and I don't know, the whole thing just smacks of fascism, but it just feels like such a compelling read. I'm having like just the the opposite experience of like a Gundam Seed here, where I'm just like reading several chapters a day with mm-hmm. like relative ease, all the while thinking this is dumb, this is stupid, but I'm having fun with it. It's wild.
It's got that unputdownable quality to it.
Yeah, I can't put it down. It's like it's a manhwa, as they call it, like the Korean variety, and it's like formatted in such a way that all of the panels are like vertically aligned, so you're scrolling, you know,
right, yeah.
old familiar motion. It's like instead of scrolling Twitter, I'm scrolling through this dumb comic, and I'm going, yes, more. This is stupid. Give me more.
Oh man, I'm kind of tempted to read it now.
Yeah. Maybe you should give it a try. Like, if only to just, as I've said, share the burden of this stupidity. Mm-hmm. But the format itself is pretty awesome, I gotta say. And finally, I wanted to mention another manga I've been reading, because as I've said in the green room, I've been very obsessed with fighting games recently, and I've been reading this manga called Tai Ari Deshita Ojousama wa Kakuto Game Nante Shinai, which translates to young ladies don't play fighting games or something like that.
Okay.
And it's really lovely manga. It's about a young girl who is recently enrolled into like this prestigious all-girl private school. She's obsessed with becoming respectable and ladylike, etc. And she meets another girl who embodies all of these qualities that she desires. She's like elegant and demure and ladylike, etc., etc. And she's like, oh my god, she's so admirable. But then she discovers that this other girl has a secret obsession with fighting games. With,
hell yeah.
This game called Iron Senpai 4. girl number one, she, in her former life, so to speak, was also obsessed with fighting games before she had to give it up and become a lady, so to speak. Mm. So, they both are embroil each other in this secret passion, you could call it. One of the big rules in this private school is that video games are absolutely strictly forbidden. Mm. So, they're constantly like trying to find some way to keep their forbidden love a secret, as it were, this love of fighting games. as you can expect, it's just like it's got big gay energy. It's got like big Yuri energy, and there's a whole bunch of like fighting game chats in there. Like you can tell whoever wrote this manga is also deeply involved, deeply conversant about fighting games and the way that they work. So it's like it's this silly and kind of sweet metaphor for like a young forbidden romance, but at the same time it's also like fucking fighting games. So it's pretty cool. Yes it is.
Nice.
Yeah, and that's me. What's been on the agenda for you lately? What have you been watching?
Well, I have watched everything that's currently available for Demon Slayer, the anime.
Yes.
And I absolutely loved it. It's like for me one of the best animes I've watched in a long time. There's like one character who ruins it, obviously Tanjiro. not Tanjiro, sorry. Zenitsu.
Tanjiro's the good boy, the precious
boy. Yeah, Tanjiro's the good boy. Zenitsu is the boy that screams.
Shit boy.
Nonstop and cries. And but like in his sleep, he is good at fighting when he's asleep. And he's very cool when he's asleep. And I wish he was asleep more, but he's not. And sometimes like his presence really does ruin the vibe because it's, you know, like very beautiful to look at. And it's very, how do I put this? So it's like, it's beautiful to look at. And there's parts of it that are very serene and serious and sincere. Mm-hmm. And then this guy just shows up chewing scenery, wasting time. There are entire scenes that are just him screaming about girls and stuff, and he just like, doesn't need it. Like, I think we've had this conversation before, like, what the hell is he there for? Who's he supposed to be for?
Yeah.
But the rest of it is so good. The last arc was really good. It's all about, like, empathy being a great power, and sensitive boy goes on a journey to try and rescue his sister, I guess, from being a demon, and meets lots of people along the way, learns lots of things along the way. Yeah, I really recommend it to anyone that hasn't seen it.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. What's your IMDb score for Demon Slayer altogether?
It loses so many points for Tanjiro, and also like the energy that character has seems to sometimes rub off on other characters. So you end up like the last episode or penultimate episode was just people screaming and crying for like half an hour, so it really, really loses points. Ooh. For that stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe like an 8, yeah, 7 okay. or 8. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. Once you get to the end of the shonen anime, like, you know, that's where you load all of your crying and screaming, right? Like,
yeah.
You're gonna get a critical mass of like crying and screaming.
I think presumably they're gonna do more seasons of that.
Oh yes. Oh, cool.
I don't know. I haven't looked that up, but I presume they are. So I'll look forward to that. I definitely would watch more of it if there was more of it.
Hell yeah! Hell yeah! No, I'm glad that you like that this anime clicked with you. I'm like, I've watched up to the Mugen Train arc recently, and you know, I fuck with Demon Slayer as well. I was just a little bit put off by the internet discourse about it being the greatest thing since sliced bread, or like just the greatest anime ever or whatever. But that's the kind of hyperbole you got to deal with every new show that comes out.
Sure. Yeah,
but I do think it's definitely true that I don't know, these sort of shonen shows of late, the recent shonen fare, they do such a great job of like distilling all of like these successful and moving elements of like shonen of the past, and making them into something more potent, and Demon Slayer is a really great example of that. Jujutsu Kaisen does that too, to a mixed effect for me, but like
I mean, Demon Slayer has like really fantastic pacing in my mind. Like, the one thing that I really liked about it was there wasn't really any filler. There were episodes that were like sort of downtime episodes that you get in shonen, but none of it felt like filler. It all felt like it served a purpose, and so every great moment felt really earned in that show.
That great characters, great art too.
Yeah, like, fantastic. Inosuke, Boar Boy. Can't get enough of him.
Yeah, it's the whole host of lovable folks.
Yeah, so that's what I've been watching mainly. I did start the part two of the final season of Attack on Titan. I'm about halfway through that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, some pretty interesting stuff happening there, but I haven't finished that yet, so I'll hold off talking about it for now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I've read all of the Attack on Titan manga. I'd love to see it's animated though, so I gotta set aside some time for that. I'd love to see it in motion.
Yeah, I mean, it is you know, despite its like questionable politics, it is like really, really good show. So, I really enjoy watching it.
Yeah. Yeah. The same. I agree. And you know, the questionable politics is like a part of the enjoyment to some degree.
It's just, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it asks some interesting questions and some dumb questions. But it keeps you on your toes, I guess. It's,
yeah. Well, okay. If that's everything for that segment, how about we move on to our definitions?
Sounds good.
Still going with this definition, a sort of more abstract one from Ursula Le Guin's on not reading science fiction. All fiction offers us a world we can't otherwise reach, whether because it's in the past or in a far or imaginary place, or describes experiences we haven't had, or leads us into minds different from our own. To some people, this change of worlds, this unfamiliarity, is an insurmountable barrier. To others, an adventure and a pleasure.
It's the preamble. I suggest our listeners mull that over, just roll it around in your head a little bit. as we dive into some fictitious worlds that eerily mirror our own in some uncomfortable ways.
Yes. Like,
even though your surroundings may change and the people around you may change, how much of yourself is capable of changing along with that? Or these are sub questions that are asked in these episodes.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. Lots to talk about with these episodes. But before we can get into the episode summary, we do have to ask, what other non-anime texts out there are could be considered isekai? Could take this definition of transfer into another world or reincarnation into another world and repackage it? Lawrence, I believe you have something for us.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I got a little something. I got an interesting one, actually. I posed the question, is Severance an isekai?
Okay.
Have you been able to watch Severance yet?
I haven't watched it yet.
No. That's okay. Well, let me give you the brief rundown. So the reason why I'm wondering why Severance is an isekai is because the main conceit of this television series Severance is that our protagonist, played by Adam Scott, works at a like shady pharma tech company, and like some sort of secretive capacity that is so secretive that he has to undergo like a special surgery called Severance, which like tempers with his like temporal lobe and like the area of his brain like associated with like time and place, etc. But the effect of it is that Adam Scott's character basically has two sets of memories and two different sort of personalities. So when he arrives at work, he switches over into his work I want to say persona, but it isn't quite a persona. But then, like, once he clocks out, the person that walks out of the building, that walks out of the office, doesn't remember anything about work. Mm-hmm. He just goes home, enjoys his time off, and for him, it's as if he's never been to work at all because he doesn't remember any of that. Conversely, the Adam Scott who goes to work, does the work, and then finishes at the end of the day, doesn't have any memories or like know anything at all about the Adam Scott that lives outside of the office. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. That's cool.
I feel like I really butchered that that explanation, but hopefully that made sense. So
yeah, that made sense.
So he's basically living two parallel existences from 9 to 5. The Adam Scott from 9 to 5 only ever experiences the 9 to 5. So his day starts when he walks into the office, and his day ends when he walks out. And then the next day starts with him walking into the office again. His eyes open, he's back in, and then he gets back to work. It's funny. So could this be an isekai? Would you say this is an isekai?
Damn.
I'm just throwing it out there.
It's an interesting one because I guess he is kind of physically, his physical body is almost going between two different worlds, right? If you think of like your time at your job as being like a small encapsulated world, which it can be.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you're at your job, feels like there isn't anything else, right? Specific set of rules you have to follow, a specific mode of like behavior and communication that you have to perform. And that's very different often to who you are at home, or can be.
Yeah.
And having a literal separation of those, I guess you could almost argue they are being transferred into another world, right?
Yeah. I mean, he may as well be walking through a portal into a world unknown to him. But except instead of carrying over his memories, his thoughts, his personality, is like a whole new track. He follows a whole new track of like memories, and as such, his values and his personality are like different in a way. Not like wildly different, but like the things you care about, the things you want, are different when you're at work and than when you're at home. And that is only like reinforced when there is this mental divide that is like wedge between you at work and the you at home. Needless to say, I thought it was a real compelling show. I liked it.
Yeah, I'd really like to watch that. You could almost argue that like the door into his workplace is like a portal, right?
Yeah.
For his brain. A brain portal.
Brain portal.
That's an interesting one.
Well, no need to overthink it, but like, what's your take?
Well, I kind of feel like the definition of isekai can maybe be like very broad. And if his physical body is not as such being transferred into a literal other world, but like maybe it's more metaphorical isekai.
Yeah,
I think that would be my stance on it, that it's maybe a metaphorical isekai rather than a literal one.
I like that. A metaphorical isekai. Postmodern isekai.
Yes.
Isekai that thinks it's too good to be an isekai. Yeah, all right. Let's say Severance 2022 is a metaphorical isekai. I'm satisfied with that.
Yeah, let's do it. Get it here first. It's now time to move on to our episode summary. And before we dive into this, I just wanted to note that we're going to be doing this a little bit differently to how we usually do it. New and improved. We're fucking with the format and then hopefully finding out. What I'm going to do is read a short summary of an episode, and then we're just going to talk about that episode. And Lawrence, you can jump in if there is anything I say that you wanted to.
I will count on it. I'm going to make this much longer than it should be with all of my tedious thoughts and comments. Let's go.
Well, there is a lot to talk about in these episodes. A lot happens. So yeah, let's get into it. Starting with episode 12, Return to the Capital. Subaru and Amelia return home to the Roswell Mansion to find that they've been visited by an emissary from the capital. Amelia must visit the capital for a conference to discuss the royal selection. Subaru begs to accompany her, and with some input from Roswell and from Rem, she reluctantly agrees. Amelia agrees, that is. In the capital, they pay a visit to the Appa vendor, or Ninga vendor, from the first arc, and finally buy some delicious Appas. They meet a knight named Julius, who Subaru instantly identifies as a rival for Amelia's affections. Amelia leaves Subaru in search to go in search of Reinhardt, and Subaru then encounters the three hoodlums from the first arc, as well as Old Man Rom, who's looking for felt in the city, and a mysterious new woman.
new waifu.
Yeah.
It's several new waifus are about to drop. I love that.
Yeah, they are.
I love that about these episodes.
There's a lot of new characters in these episodes.
Hell yeah.
So Amelia begs Subaru to stay in the hotel, I guess it's a hotel, during her conference, and he agrees, making a promise to use no magic and to wait for her return. However, pretty much as soon as she leaves, he's hitchhiking his way after her with the new woman, who is revealed to be Priscilla Barriel, another candidate in the royal selection, Amelia's rival. Amused by Subaru's whole vibe, Priscilla brings him to the conference as her appa handler, much to Amelia's dismay and disappointment. In the Great Hall, I'm calling it the Great Hall, what it is, we meet two more candidates, Krish Karsten and Anastasia Hoshin, before Reinhardt announces that he has located the fifth candidate. This mysterious fifth candidate is revealed to be Felt, the orphan child he abducted at the end of the first arc.
That's episode 12. You may refer to it as the Great Hall, but I refer to it as the not-so-great hall. due to all of these cracker-ass, mayo-ass white men running the... Old white men running the show. Did I mention they were old? I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is actually one of the things that I wrote down. A court of old dudes naturally makes the decisions. It's all of them. Old men. White men.
With an extra side of mayo, I should add, these old folks are crusty, and they're full of hot air. I think it's a sort of a deliberate contrast here that this whole selection of this panel of white dudes alongside a whole crowd of men are like responsible for making this selection. Because this episode is also the episode that that shows us just what this royal selection is about. Because up to this point, you may be thinking like they're selected for royalty. They're going to be like the new leaders of this country. They're going to be like the new king/queen, I suppose. But they specifically allude to a prophecy that is written on a stone that calls to seek out the dragon priestess.
That's it.
You know Miko. From what we know in the past episodes, this nation has made a pact with a dragon. What that pact entails, protection of some sort. Who knows?
Yeah,
these five lasses each have like a different idea of like what that pact should be about. They don't really get to be the ruler. They gotta talk to the dragon, do some dragon handling. I don't know.
Yeah. I wonder what's actually involved in being the priestess. It's they haven't really said anything about that. I mean, they've said some things about, or like in the next episode, I guess they talk a little bit about like what they would do if they were ruler, but like, yeah, we don't know any specifics about what's involved in being a dragon priestess. Hard to imagine.
No, but it's got these white dudes shook, and they need a brand new lady, a brand new one.
Yeah, and there was like 4 candidates in the prophecy, but they said some new words, some new writing appeared on the stone, right, which said, oh, actually there's going to be a 5th, and that's where Falk comes in. So finally we get to find out what happened to her, because obviously at the end of the first arc, Reinhardt kidnapped her, abducted her, took her to the capital, and that's when Subaru runs into old man Rom in the alleyway. I was a little confused by that moment, because Rom says to Subaru something like, you haven't seen Felt anywhere, have you? It's like, how long has it been? He's just traipsing around, looking for casually.
turning over boxes. are you under here? That was kind of goofy, which is makes it even weirder when he goes like 0 to 100 and like decides to storm the Great Hall.
In this episode, one thing that is interesting and becomes even more interesting over the next couple of episodes is the sort of seeds being sown for some tension between Subaru and Amelia, where she tells him she wants him to stay at the hotel.
Yes.
She says, you push yourself too hard and you put yourself in danger where I'm concerned, and I just don't want you to do that. I want you to stay here. You still haven't healed from your battle with the pigs, whatever, the dogs. What were they? The dogs. and you just need to chill here. Please, please chill here. And he's like, oh, sure, I'll chill here. Wink, wink. And he goes after her immediately. As soon as she's left, he's out on the street going after her. And Rem totally enables him, because she seems to have some powerful feelings for him now.
Yeah, Rem is like totally smitten. Rem is like putty in Subaru's hands. He doesn't he doesn't quite realize it, but like it's over for Rem. Rem is head over heels. It's good you brought that up, because there's like a couple of observations I had about Amelia and Subaru as well, actually. Like there are so many moments throughout this episode where Amelia asks of Subaru to like to do one thing, and then like Subaru takes a no for a yes and just does whatever the fuck he wants anyway. He's very much assured of his like his status and his proximity to Amelia, and that's been shaped through several like restarts, reincarnations in this world, I suppose. And although Amelia really does genuinely like Subaru, she does not, she's not on the same level. She's very aware of like his flaws and his zealousness, especially. He will just do and say whatever and like, act like a child. Like, When they enter the capital at first, like Amelia is holding Subaru's hand, and Subaru is like, "Oh, is this okay? Should we be holding hands? I'm so shy." but the reason Amelia is holding his hand is because she knows that like if he doesn't, he's gonna go off to do some cringe ass nonsense.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I definitely felt that when she was asking him to please stay in the hotel, and she was saying to him, you know, you push yourself too hard for my sake, I don't want you to do that. I think a big part of it isn't necessarily just because he pushes himself, but because he can't be trusted to stay out of things. He can't be trusted to just, you know, chill and wait and watch. He's too loud, too outspoken, too reckless. And she, yeah, I think it's a much, she understands there's a much broader problem for him. Like, she's obviously her own person and she's got her own shit going on with this raw selection. It's a big deal. And she just wants to get it done with. She knows that
huge deal.
Yeah, she knows that he will find a way to fuck it up. I think she probably knows that. And that's why she doesn't ask him to come. And, you know, he does that anyway. He does fuck it up anyway.
Yeah, he's like still not entirely aligned on the mores of this world, which we'll see more of. But more than anything, Subaru just feels this strong need to be all up in Emilia's business. Like,
yeah.
There is a moment where he just straight up tells on himself, which is after Emilia leaves him at the hotel, Subaru is like just looking out the window, just like thinking like Batman thoughts. Emilia's nothing but enemies here. I must protect her, etc., etc. And then he turns to Rem and he says, "I can't stand not being involved in Emilia's important affairs."
Yeah, I wrote down the exact same note about that. Yeah, he really does tell on himself, doesn't he? So selfish.
Yeah, yeah. This is really all about him. All mm-hmm. about like supporting his waifu, but you know, not via waving glow sticks. I don't know. Like,
yeah, but you know, like listening to her when she asks something of you. Like,
yeah,
he really does. He really does see himself as the main character of the world, right? He sees, because he's very aware of the idea of isekai and of fantasy. I think he probably sees himself as the hero, and he sees his purpose in being in this world as like being by Emilia's side and making sure everything goes well for her.
Yeah,
and obtaining her affections.
Yeah,
but he like doesn't see her as a full person, you know.
Yeah. This is just another like RPG quest for him, and it's sort of like mirrored as well in his two encounters, one with Julius and one with Purishira Barrio-sama. when he meets Priscilla, I thought that was really, really telling, because he sees her being harried into an alley by the three familiar thugs that he's run into so many times, who have like even killed him or like fucked him up otherwise on other occasions.
Yeah,
in other lives, you know. But when he sees this going down, he's like, "Oh, it's time to go into Tsuhiro RPG mode," which is a good thing, I suppose. You see someone in trouble, you want to like help them out, but you know, it's sort of like you've been there before, you know what these guys are capable of, isn't it? Like maybe a good idea to like find the guy with a sword, a guard, a Reinhardt perhaps, to have your back. But no, he's just like hops right in, like involves himself immediately with this this charming madam, and no thoughts, head empty.
Yeah, his hero complex is pretty obnoxious.
yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's Priscilla has a knight called Al. Shout out Al, the suit of armor Al.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well.
yeah. And at the end of this moment in the alley, Al and Amelia show up together. And Al, because of Spar's reaction to seeing them together, Al even says, your friend is more worried about losing you to another man than he is happy to see you. That's totally right, isn't it?
Yeah. No, you just read that. You just read library open. Library on it.
That's Subaru in a nutshell.
I like Al. He's got like a cool vibe. He's got like a very very Elden Ring kind of vibe. He's sort of like outsider knight, sort of like a hedge knight. Just like a not quite as involved in the world either, but like still of the world. Uh-huh. He's pretty cool.
And he's shirtless.
Yeah. Yeah, it's literally the fucking Elden Ring fit when you're like just putting together armor from like shit you've picked up, and like you don't want to go over your weight limit, so you like take off your shirt or something, but keep the helmet. And I like Priscilla a lot as well.
Yeah, she's funny.
Yeah, I feel like Subaru and Priscilla make for interesting counterparts, because they sort of suffer from the same kind of like delusion or entitlement, you could even call it, when they meet each other in the alley alongside these fucks, she says something along the lines of everything in the world works in my favor.
She says that like, a few times, right? Like, yeah, the world is designed to work best for me or whatever.
Precisely. Just just a straight up just a fan waving Ojo-sama who has never had any trouble in her life, and it's like led a life of privilege. And this is so neatly characterized when Subaru hands her an appa, which she's astounded by, because she thinks apples are white. She's never seen an unpeeled apple in her life, and that's like hilarious. That's so good.
Yeah, she's so privileged. She's always had someone peel and cut them for her, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I feel like they have like a lot more in common than at first glance. I'd like to see them interact a bit more.
Yeah, and like one thing that I thought was interesting is she so when Subaru hitchhikes, she picks him up immediately with her knight in their dragon-drawn carriage, and she agrees to take him inside the conference. That's her appa handler. Uh-huh. Because she thinks it will be amusing. She thinks things will be interesting if she does that. That's what she says. And Roswell says something really similar when they go inside, and Roswell's like, oh, I hope my servant isn't bothering you. And then says, well, I guess he can stay because it will be amusing if he stays. they're both...
Oh, that's right.
Maybe both... I don't know. I think Roswell does have Amelia's best interests at heart, because he is, like, you know, her knight or whatever. Not exactly her knight, but her representative. But he seems to want to cause some chaos in the same way that Priscilla does.
Yeah, they're both just slightly jokerified.
I even put a picture of, maybe it's in the next episode, of like when stuff does start to kick off, Roswell smirks a little bit.
Yeah,
he's like clearly enjoying things, and Amelia is like having a really hard time because she doesn't want him there, Subaru, and she asked him not to be there, and he's there anyway. She's obviously so disappointed in him and so confused by his behavior, and these people are just fucking with her.
It is Roswell, after all, who sort of makes the suggestion in the first place to bring Subaru to the, the capital. So does he have some sort of ulterior motive in mind, or maybe he just likes to see shit pop off?
Maybe he just likes to clown around. He's a lordly clown.
He is a literal clown lord, yes.
I think someone even calls Subaru a wretched clown before they go inside the Great Hall.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I wrote that down. Apple Hand, a wretched clown. I think someone calls him that. Something that we haven't got into yet in this episode is one of the other, or a couple of the other new characters.
Yes.
Felix Argyle and Wilhelm von Astria, the sword demon. So they are the, or like, Felix is the emissary who visited from the capital at the start. Catboy, with the appearance of Catgirl.
Yeah.
Confusing Subaru a little.
Yeah. Subaru almost fell for a trap, one could say. a cat-shaped a trap. I love Felix, I have to say.
Yeah.
I'm a simple person, and if you give me a cat waifu, I'm there for it. If you give me a cat femboy, I'm doubly there for it. That's just how I operate. That's as simple as it gets with me. There is just a delightful frisson to the phrase "nyaru hodo." Tickles me.
That's in Hunter x Hunter as well. And Ark. Nyaruhodo.
Nyaruhodo.
Very funny. And Felix as well is pretty smart and perceptive, I think, as a character.
Yes.
Very much so. Few episodes.
Mm-hmm. Both Roswell and Priscilla are the jokers of privilege, and Felix in some way is the joker of gender. She's the but I think she has some good moments in the upcoming episode, so I'm gonna save my comments for Dan. Wilhelm, on the other hand, just a wife guy.
This guy rules.
Just a sweet old wife guy.
Love when at the start Subaru brings him some tea because he wants to kind of get some info out of him, and takes a sip and he says, I do this. Got a lovely flavor. It's very sweet. And you find out that he's a sword demon, in the carriage on the way back. Felix says something to him wouldn't you rather chop people up? It's I didn't expect that, I guess. Some kind of sword demon. I don't know. I'm curious to know more about this wife guy.
Yeah, it's remarkable how quickly a friendship forms between Wilhelm and Subaru, just a couple of exchanges of words, and Wilhelm is I like this kid. And when Subaru brings up his wife, he just sort of just gets a thousand yard stare, and he's like, yes, my wife.
Subaru says something didn't you think your wife was the most beautiful woman in the world when you married her? Yes, I did.
See, there's something there, and I look forward to learning some more about that, because Wilhelm is also very perceptive. I think one thing that endeared him to Subaru, he says, is Subaru has the eyes of someone who is known death intimately. So
exactly,
they're sort of trauma bonded in a way.
I wonder. How does he know? Does he know? Is he just guessing? Maybe he knows something.
Well, he's got those solid snake vibes, you know. He knows the eyes of a soldier, and Subaru isn't quite a soldier, but he's definitely seen death.
Mm-hmm. We also have another new character, Julius.
Yes.
What I wrote down about Julius was he's a fuckboy.
Yeah, he's a fuckboy, isn't he?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, I wrote smoke boy, but like he's definitely got fuckboy energy, yeah.
He really does, yeah. Just like they meet him outside some building, and he kisses Amelia's hand, and Subaru freaks out. And while Subaru is like convulsing and gargling and stuff, Julius says something like, "That's no way to conduct yourself in front of someone you just met." Well, yeah, right? He's not wrong.
Subaru can't really seem to handle the vibes that Julius gives off, even though it becomes like evident that he is like not interested in Amelia at all, just being chivalrous. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Right.
He immediately is elevated to like the Sasuke to his Naruto, in a sense. I suppose it's not an entirely accurate statement, like, but you get the picture.
Yeah, definitely a rival in Survivor.
Rather than like understand these people and like understand their relationships, Subaru is like playing out the isekai script in his head that tells him that Julius is the rival and he's going to have to fight for Amelia's affection at some point, and he does.
Yes, with disastrous consequences.
Yeah.
One thing that was kind of interesting is, like, just after that scene, as they part ways, Subaru and Amelia, just before he goes into the alley, I can't remember exactly what it is he says to her, but he says something very, like, blatantly along the lines of, you're the woman that I love, or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Not exactly those words. But she basically just ignores him, and I sometimes wonder if, like, there's a few moments like that where he says really over-the-top romantic stuff and she just, like, pretends that he doesn't. Is she pretending that he's not saying those things? Does she not understand what he's saying? Or is him saying that stuff just a joke for the audience? Or, like, him saying it and her not reacting? Is that just a joke for the audience? I wonder what's going on there.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think it's a little bit of all of that, but also like Subaru has sort of like made a habit of like making outrageous like statements of affection towards Amelia, and I guess at that moment it was sort of like I get the picture. I need to be somewhere, you know?
Yeah, it's just him being him at this stage, right?
Yeah.
Shouldn't take it too seriously.
Yeah, I mean, Amelia is definitely like capable of playing along, but like she was not in the mood there, I think.
Yeah, she was all business. She didn't want him there in the first place anyway, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there are some reasons for that, but we'll save those for the next episode. One final observation I have here: when Subaru discovers that Felix is a boy, he's sort of like says something like, "You're a guy. Why do you have cat ears and a tail?"
Cat ears are for girls.
Which tells me Subaru thinks all cats are girls and all dogs are boys.
Yes, he definitely thinks that.
Yeah. Just telling on himself continually.
Yeah. We'll now move on to episode 13. Self-proclaimed knight, Natsuki Subaru. Felt loudly proclaims that she wants nothing to do with this royal selection before the other candidates go on to introduce themselves properly and explain why they want to be the dragon priestess. Members of the council and the audience start to complain about Amelia being half-elf, some calling her a half-devil and saying that she should not even be a part of the process. This is too much for Subaru. He explodes in a rage, ignoring an increasingly distressed Amelia. He declares that he is her knight and that he will help her become a ruler.
Oh, Julius. So cringe.
Yes, so cringe. I hate him so much at this moment. Yeah. Julius, who we now know as Anastasia's knight, scoffs at Subaru, seemingly pissed off that he's making light of the great job that knights do. He points out Amelia's unhappy expression as proof that Subaru cannot be a real knight.
Subaru is stealing valor.
Amelia denounces Subaru, and he's thrown out so that the conference can continue. Things are interrupted, though, as old man Rom breaks in through the floor and attempts to rescue Felt. He is quickly subdued, forcing Felt to agree to participate after all so that Rom can be protected. The royal selection begins in earnest. In another room, Julius challenges Subaru to a duel with wooden swords to be held at the training ground. He wants to protect the honour of the Imperial Knights from this doofus. As Subaru gets the shit kicked out of him, a knight warns the royal selection candidates of what's going on. None of them will agree to stop the fight, so Amelia goes herself, arriving just in time to witness a beleaguered Subaru attempt to use Shamak to defeat Julius, to no avail. He is defeated. Subaru wakes up in a bed with Amelia at his side, and the two have a difficult conversation about what the hell it is Subaru thinks he's playing at. They yell at each other and argue. Amelia is done with her nonsense, with his nonsense. She says her goodbye. Yes.
Yeah, just a big old sayonara from Amelia's, which is probably one of the more powerful chatty scenes in the series up to
absolutely.
This point.
Yeah, for me, right? I think that scene was like a big redemption moment for the series, like to me anyway, like. Mm-hmm. In terms of, like, I've struggled a little bit with some of the wordiness and some of the, like, conversations, but this was really good.
Yeah.
It was a great moment for Amelia as well.
Yeah. It's like, after Subaru has just, like, had the pulp beaten out of him, it's like, nothing left to hide, and, like, and they both sort of, like, let it all out, and it turns out that Subaru is just like this holding on to like a lot of bitterness, mm-hmm. a lot of soreness, and a lot of expectation towards Amelia, like mm-hmm. almost like comes out and says, I have madam, I have earned pussy.
basically
Ma'am, I am one of the good guys. I deserve to be rewarded.
Pretty much, this is what he thinks. She's having none of it.
Yeah, I have some real choice words.
Yeah, I think one of the more interesting things she said towards the end of their conversation was like, it was something like, the version of me that lives with you must be amazing. She can understand everything and she can feel all of your pain. Saying, like, I know you've got a version of me in your head that's different to who I am. It's like, yeah, perfectly sums up exactly how he's been behaving, right? He's doing things that he thinks she wants or thinks are good for her and assumes that she will just get it and go along with it, despite her numerous protestation, is that a word?
Mm-hmm.
Despite her numerous protests, he just doesn't listen to her. Or he just thinks that she doesn't know what she wants. What she actually really needs him there, is what he thinks.
Yeah, I think that's like one of the the more key lines of the episode. And the show thus far, the version of me that lives within you must be amazing. I think Emilia recognizes that there is like this idealized version of her living in Subaru's head, and to some degree she wanted to live up to that. Because this is also an episode where we get like a lot clearer look at I'm gonna call it half elf racism.
It's a bit... really kicks in here, doesn't it?
yeah, it's a bit goofy to call it that, but
you call it prejudice.
Yeah. There is a version of Emilia that lives in Subaru's head, and there's a version of Emilia that lives in the minds of like all of the people who are familiar with the half elf features, the silver hair, and the legend of the witch that we up to now know very little about.
Yeah.
And so like Emilia is already familiar with like having to manage these expectations, these versions that are in people's heads, which is as a mixed race individual, it's a recognizable skill. I'm sure there are like plenty of folks who can vouch for that as well. And Emilia is very adamant that Subaru, for one, she doesn't want Subaru around because he knows he's going to cause shit. But I think she's also very concerned about not damaging that image that Subaru has in his head about Emilia. So she doesn't want Subaru to recognize, to find out just what other people think of her, for fear that he might start feeling that way as well, or might start feeling suspicious or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. The opposite happens, of course. But she isn't quite as happy about that either.
No, she even says something like, I had hoped that you would treat me like everybody else, like treat me normally, I guess. Treat me like I'm normal, or treat me the same way you'd treat anyone else, but you haven't done that. Treat me completely differently. And he's like, well, I can't treat you like everybody else, it's impossible. So yeah, that must suck for her. I'm glad she was able to set her boundaries. She told him to stay in the capital while she goes back. He's got a stew in it.
You had to do one thing, Subaru. Things could have been so different.
Yeah. Because he really does do everything she was afraid he would do, right? In this episode, he like screams at the council for being half-elf prejudiced. He screams at Julius, gets in a fight, uses his magic when he promised he wouldn't. Little shit.
Yeah, so this moment, I think, slaps as much as it does, because there is a genuine connection between Emilia and Subaru. They are drawn to each other somewhat. I think perhaps Puck hinted at this in past episodes. It's because Emilia is like so starved of affection. She's been on the outside of like so many relationships because of the way she looks, because of being ostracized for her appearance. So she is let into this world by Subaru of like of closeness, of possibly romance, who knows, right? Of course, Subaru has like a different narrative entirely running in his head. So it has to hurt so much when this narrative sort of comes spilling out of Subaru, like all of its ugliness and pettiness as well. So it's like Emilia's one opportunity to come to be close to someone, and then one part of getting close to someone is eventually getting hurt as well, which is a lesson that we all learn. Amelia may not have had as much opportunity for that lesson to be learned. So, yeah, that hurts.
Yeah, for sure. She seems like she's deeply disappointed in him, or he's disappointed her.
And Sigmar does like the whole like contorted face thing as well. Like it looks horrifying. It's great.
Yeah, they do a good job in the art, the animation, of making him look as deranged as possible. Mm-hmm. While he's screaming at her about everything he's done for her and how like none of the good things that have happened recently would have happened without him. Or, like,
yeah.
It
was all because of me.
Yeah.
And he literally says, "You owe me. You owe me.
Uh-huh. Well, she says, like, we'll end this because you've done enough. You don't have to do anything mm-hmm. else for me." That's, like, her mm-hmm. final favor to him. She feels like she still owes him a debt of some kind, right?
Yeah.
And this is her repaying it. "You don't have to do anything for me ever again."
Yeah. It's very, very clinically closing the book on this ledger, the ledger of their relationship. Mm. Like, just putting a line under it. It's like a transaction complete.
Yep. And this is the last we see of her for the next couple of, or the next episode, right? She's not in that at all. But this is the end of the episode. There's lots of stuff that happens before that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm just looking at my notes.
Just that was the juiciest part, right? It's like can't not talk about that first.
Yeah, well, lots of juicy parts, to be honest. Like the rivalry between Julius and Subaru escalates. Here's a Japanese learner moment I had while watching this episode, mm-hmm. where Subaru is like just talking hella shit in the Great Hall, and mm-hmm. Julius turns to him and he says, "Sorewa utsukushi kunai." I'm like,
"Utsukushi kunai."
And I'm like, it's like, he's basically saying, stop being ugly, Subaru. You're being ugly in public. Jesus, stop it.
Julius kind of calls him on his shit, doesn't he?
He like sort of recognizes that Subaru is out of his depth in this situation, like just tramples all over decorum and like doesn't know how to act, and then he literally steals valor. He's like, I'm a knight too, actually. Like when he doesn't even know what the fuck that means.
Yeah, like, and it seems like Julius is really pissed off that Subaru has no idea what is involved in becoming a knight, or the hard work that goes into it, or whatever. So
yeah,
he's like, this little shit out here claiming to be a knight, fuck him.
yeah, it's like really, really affects him. But it's not just about the training or the uniform or whatever. No. Like he knows, like, you know, if you really considered yourself a knight, Subaru, would you really like step up to this panel of old folks and be like, it's a me, Amelia's knights, make a fool of yourself, like shit all over Amelia's moment here, and yeah, this is also when one of the white guy panelists calls Amelia a half devil.
Yeah, right.
You know, something that she's probably had to deal with all of her life. And Subaru jumps in and like he's like, I will protect you from this racism. which is so ridiculously short-sighted, and I can only like imagine the kind of embarrassment going through Emilia's head, because she wants to say something. She's probably been called a half-devil all of her life, and she knows what she wants to tell that guy. All of a sudden, Subaru pops up to make it about him.
That's it. He makes the whole thing about him, doesn't he? It's all about him. He says he's Emilia's best knight, even though he isn't. He's not even a knight, let alone her best knight. And talks about how he's going to make her the ruler. He's going to ensure that she's able to become the dragon priestess or whatever. Then Julius points out Emilia's facial expression to him. He's like, can you call yourself a knight when this is the look that you inspire and the person
that you came to serve? Ice cutting. Cold. Yeah,
and that's when, Emilia kicks him out. He starts his descent into madness.
the sickness called despair, one could say.
Yeah.
This episode was also interesting for upping the waifu count as well, as I've mentioned. We're introduced to the candidates, and they each get like a moment to express their wish for the kingdom should they become the dragon priestess, which was pretty cool. My question for you is, do you have a favorite, and what did you think about their opening arguments?
I think Felt's my favorite, because she said she's just going to destroy everything.
Yeah, that's the one that resonated with
the
most, definitely. Yeah.
Like, Priscilla says that she should be chosen because it's just the correct choice. She's just the correct choice, because she's the center of the universe or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Krush says she wants to, like, reject the dragon's supremacy. Like, we don't want no stinking dragon contract, or whatever.
Yeah.
Anastasia admits that despite her commercial success, she owns some kind of company. She's still greedy.
Yes.
And Emilia thinks she wants to make a world where everyone is equal.
Yes.
whatever that means. Sounds kind of like high school prodigies have it easy, right?
Yes. I had like instant flashbacks to Tsukasa et al.
It's just such simple, like easy shorthand for like, this is the good guy. They want everyone to be equal. But like, she doesn't actually need to explain what exactly that means.
Yeah.
The correct choice is Felt, who wishes to destroy the entire system.
That would be sick. I'd love to see Felt's in power. I gotta say, I am curious about Krush's approach, Krush's ideology. We learn a bit more about her, and like she has some surprising depth in the amount of time that we spend with her, I think. She's definitely the unladylike lady, so to speak. projects a very powerful front.
She's very forthright.
Yeah. I like Krush a lot. I like Priscilla a lot too.
I feel like we just don't know anything about Anastasia or Anastasia.
Yeah, except that she has like a cool Kansai accent.
Yeah, she has a Kansai accent, but they call it something else, don't they? Like Kararagi.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I don't remember what they say exactly. Mm-hmm.
She's just like she lives somewhere cold.
Priscilla has like there's a debate that sort of erupts about whether Felt should be considered for the nomination or not. Her one guy like calls her a gutter rat or whatever.
Yeah, gutter rat from the slums.
Gutter rat from the slums. And like Priscilla is like literally ready to like use her fucking magic to obliterate Felt for a second. Doesn't get the chance to because Reinhardt steps in being Reinhardt. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's just the kind of tip that Priscilla is on. She is wilding. She's out of control with the entitlement, and just the haughtiest of Ajosamas.
Sure. You know,
gotta love it. There's a line I think Felt says this when. They discover that Subaru and Julius are going at it in the arena. Felt says something like, you like to watch vicious beasts torment weak creatures, don't you? Priscilla.
Right. That's a read.
Yeah, which is a good read, but it only makes Priscilla hotter in my eyes.
I think some of this, like the stuff with Felt, made me very curious about what exactly Reinhardt's motivation is. Because obviously he found Felt in the slum and realized that she is capable of holding this dragon stone and it glows when she holds it, which is how the other candidates were found, right? So he's like, oh, I have to make this person. I found the candidate, so I'm going to represent her. I wonder if he gets any benefit if she becomes the ruler. Presumably he does. He's just unquestioningly loyal to her, despite her like crazy behavior as she's screaming at everyone.
Tries to kick him in the head. That's a great question, actually, because I don't know. Reinhardt is a character we haven't seen a great deal of him, but we do know a bit about him. I think mainly he's motivated by being the top cop, just the goodest knight that's ever been, and just following the rules. And when he realizes that Felt is recognized by the Dragonstone, he's like, oh well, you know, it's only right and it's only proper if Felt is like nominated, and I think like Reinhardt would like show the same kind of like the devotion and protectiveness to any of the other candidates I'm not sure. He might know something.
There's just something about like his unquestioning loyalty to her that was just like a little bit odd to me. Like, maybe there's something else going on there, is what I thought. But who knows? Maybe you're right. Yeah. Maybe it's just who he is. He believes in her.
Yeah, I think he just wants to be the best boy, also. Just the goodest.
The goodest boy. We have to talk about old man Rom's attempt at stealing Felt. Yeah. The most ill-conceived plan ever.
Yeah, no, he's like,
what's he thinking?
They say it's been over a month since he saw Felt. They say that in this episode, and like he's been clueless for like a month, and now he's like staged a whole ass operation to like,
yeah, like I guess throws a smoke bomb up through the floor and like just bursts up into the room, grabs her and runs.
Filled with knights.
Yeah, exactly. And magic users. Reinhardt gets rid of his smoke in like a second, and then they have him restrained. And they're, I guess, going to go imprison him. And then Felt says, oh, no, I'll do it. I'll be the queen or whatever. But that just kind of shows how like stupid their system is. They're like, one moment they're going to go like arrest him and take him away. And she can't do a damn thing about it. But the moment she's like, yeah, I'll be in this thing or whatever, they're like, oh, we must obey you now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
yeah, the whole thing's so dumb.
Well, she goes from being Nat's queen candidate to being queen candidate, so...
Monarchy's stupid.
yeah, it's dumb.
Yeah, I don't know what that guy was thinking. You really think he, like, carries her over his shoulder?
He was thinking, I must progress the plots.
Yeah, exactly. He was thinking, we need to find a way for Felt to get into the process, even though she doesn't want to be part of it.
These smoke bombs will surely progress the plot.
Oh, I just remembered something else that Subaru says to Julius. When Subaru says that he's now Amelia's knight, and Julius starts saying, you're no knight, you are a dumb boy, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Subaru says some stuff about how, like, all of them just got their job because of who their daddies are. And because they're rich and stuff. I thought that was like something Subaru feels probably in the real world is coming out a bit there.
Yeah,
you didn't like the knight daddies.
It doesn't know shit about these knights, but he might be right. Who knows? Reinhardt and Wilhelm, after all, share the same surname, don't they?
That's right.
Makes you wonder, though, why is Wilhelm a chauffeur and not a knight anymore?
Well, he's pretty old. Maybe he's, like, retired.
Yeah.
Or maybe there is something more interesting there. I don't know.
Yeah, could have something to do with his precious...
His precious wife, yeah, maybe.
What did you think about the duel between...
The duel, yeah.
Julius and Subaru.
Well, it's hard to talk about this without talking about something Felix says in the next episode.
Yes, yeah, no, I just thought that as I was saying it.
Yeah, but I guess it really comes across, without the context of the next episode... Julius is just trying to defend the honor of the Imperial Knights or whatever, and Subaru is like such a blabbering idiot that he really needs to put him in his place. They fight with wooden swords. Subaru doesn't stand a fucking chance and gets the absolute shit kicked out of him. You'd think it might humble Subaru a little bit, but it really doesn't.
You're right. Yeah, it just makes him even more... set in his ways, and like goes he's so convinced of his like protag status that he like decides to use magic again, even though it's he's been warned against it so many times it could even endanger him.
Amelia made him promise not to use magic.
And
he did.
I think Julius actually makes a statement. He says, like, I could execute you, but we're going to have a mock battle instead. He still gets his shit wrecked. Maybe we can touch back on that when we discuss the next episode.
Yeah, for sure. There's a moment where, obviously, Subaru uses Shamak, but Julius just, like, it doesn't even faze him. It's like not a problem for him to take care of that. Shows, I mean, what we knew already, which is that Subaru's not a knight. He doesn't know the first thing about being a knight. He barely knows how to use magic, honestly. But he still fought as though he could win. And he,
that's
like,
true.
Amelia asks him, like, why did you do that? Why did you enter that duel? And he says it's because he said something like, he said it to get back at Julius for saying that he wasn't worthy of Amelia.
Yeah.
Did he really think he could win?
Think he's sort of like convinced of his protag status.
Yeah,
but like,
right, yeah.
There is also like a moment during the scene in the Great Hall where like all of the knights, like Al, Julius, Reinhardt, they're all like, yes, I am so devoted to my queen. Mm-hmm. And they're all sort of like, yes, I'm super devoted, etc. And the way that Subaru reacts to this these statements of intent from these knights is sort of like rather than being oh these guys are like really really devoted to their so and so I could learn something from that. Instead, he's like, no, I can't lose to these fuckers. I have to love Emilia harder than they love their respective queens. Right. Like, yeah, missing the whole point, my guy, mm-hmm. my dude.
Really is, yeah. And I wonder how much of like his return from death ability just makes him more and more reckless as the show goes on. I think it does a little bit. Although he is still obviously like terrified of the pain of death. Maybe that played a part as well.
Yeah, I think that's sort of like pushed to the brink in the next episode, actually. Subaru has like some, I don't know, like Subaru contemplates suicide, but like mm-hmm. Not in the way that like regular folks would if they didn't have a return by death. Uh-huh. That's basically what the despair that Subaru is in. It's a strange monster of like mm-hmm. Both sadness and the need to assert control over this world that is like getting out of hand, like is escaping his grasp.
Episode 14, The Sickness Called Despair. Subaru is still in the capital, staying with Krush and doing wooden sword training with Wilhelm. He's still reeling from his conversation with Emilia and his fight. Rem has stayed to watch over him. During a trip to the city, Subaru is reminded of how badly prejudiced these fantasy hicks are against half-elves, strengthening his resolve. After a conversation over a drink one evening with Krush, Subaru seemingly decides to find an opportunity to die and return, hoping to wipe the slate clean with Emilia. However, the next day, Rem experiences a kind of distress call from her shared sense with Ram, and Subaru insists that the two of them return to the Roswell mansion immediately. In the middle of the 2.5-day journey, the two of them stop at an inn to sleep. Upon waking, Subaru finds that Rem has gone on without him, having left him a note begging him to wait there for her. Of course, our hero decides to make his own way to the mansion. He hitches a ride with a dragon cart driver and walks part of the way. At the village, however, he finds that the entire population has been slaughtered and burned. In a state of shock, Subaru makes his way to the mansion to find that Rem, too, has been killed.
The end.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
So it's like an episode where ostensibly not that much happens, but also kind of a lot does.
Yeah.
Like some big stuff does.
Yeah. Yeah, some big picture shit. Like, this is... the opening to a new arc, it seems.
Yes.
Subaru is faced with the death of Rem in the very last scene of this episode. Mm-hmm. As you can imagine, Subaru will probably not stand for that. So whether Subaru stays alive for much longer after that is a question.
Yep.
How does he decide to trigger a return from death? Who knows?
I'm curious.
This is another chat-heavy episode, I think, but one that is like very revealing of like mm-hmm. all of these new characters that we've gotten to know, namely mm-hmm. Krush, Felix, and Wilhelm.
And we should get out of the way that Felix, near the start of this episode, has a little bit of a flashback to a conversation with Julius where he asks Julius, you know, what was that all about? And implies that Julius did that fight, that duel, for Subaru's own good, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So that maybe he's sensitive to the machinations of the politics of this world, and the only way to protect Subaru may have been to thrash him in front of everyone.
That's one way of reading that. I read it a bit differently. I feel like Julius is like demonstrating a bit of a tough love. Trying to test the limits of Subaru's devotion to Emilia and show him what it really means to be a knight in like no uncertain terms, you know?
that's true.
Yeah, he's got a secret fondness for Subaru, I think, even though he like thinks he's uncouth. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well, I mean, when you're a knight, you have to be disciplined, right? Must be like very strange to see someone like Subaru get up and blather on about stuff in such a, I don't want to say thoughtless way. I think it was thoughtless, but maybe it looks brave. Maybe it looks kind of cool, actually, that somebody's doing that.
I think Julius is like surprisingly perceptive as well, in that his way is like his over-the-top way of like helping Subaru is the only thing that really reaches him. This episode is characterized, I think, by several characters wanting to help Subaru, but Subaru like rejects them each every time they try to like reach out. Like he has this this imperceptible quality where people just like Subaru. People like get to know him and they like him. Rem sort of characterizes it as him being pathetic, but in a lovable way.
Yeah, she says she's pathetic, but like that's why she's here with him.
Yeah, the fact that you're pathetic and the fact that I want to be with you are not contradictory.
Exactly, yeah.
Rem says.
And there's a few, so the characters, I could think of at least three characters, Felix, Rem, and Reinhardt all tell Subaru, you need to have basically clear lines of communication with people. You need to have open discussions with people about things instead of whatever the hell you've been doing. And he brushes every single one of them off, basically.
Yeah. Each time they're like, they try to help Subaru and like try to tell him a little about his situation and what he can do to like fix things. He's like, mind your own freaking business. Leave me the fuck alone. Yeah. Julius is the only one who's like, this kid needs a fucking beating. That's what he needs.
And he needed it yesterday.
He's the only one that was able to get through to him to like sort of in the very literal sense beat some sense into him. And yeah, he thinks he might have been successful. I think that's probably like it's a mixed result. It definitely leads to Subaru's flights at the end of the episode and like his headlong rush into danger. He definitely brought like a lot of Subaru's anger and pettiness to the surface and revealed that to Amelia. In a way, Julius is like partly responsible for that, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, but he also doesn't seem to have learned anything from it. And like, you have lots of people around him telling him, like, you just need to talk to Amelia, you'll work things out. But like, those people don't know what went on between the two of them, which was actually Amelia really being quite done with his behavior. And that's not something you can fix by just like having a discussion. Like, he needs to change.
Yeah.
He needs to work on himself and improve. He's just doing the same thing over and over again. Maybe that's like his death loop, right?
Yeah, for real. Mm-hmm. Because rather than like take any of their advice on board, be better and do better, as it were. There's a moment where Felix says, it could be Felix or Cruz. They say something like, "You have to do what you can to like reach out and like sort of like bridge this divide between himself and Amelia." And then Subaru's like, do what I can, do something that only I can do. I know, I'll kill myself.
Like, that's when he decides he's gonna kill himself.
Basically, yeah. It's rather than change his situation or like grow and learn, he would rather kill himself and like reset everything, go back to wherever he goes back to, and like continue to redouble his manipulation, basically.
Yeah,
like I know Emilia will react in this and this way, so I'll avoid that and pick option B this time.
Yeah, or whatever, like a video right? game.
Yeah,
go back to your last save point.
Yeah, exactly. And can you sort of imagine like if he did like return by death, and he like woke up, for example, at the beginning of like the Capital arc, right?
Yeah,
I would see Subaru like making the same mistakes, doing the same things, but like, oh, this time I'll do it better. I'll pick a fight with Julius again, but this time I'll win. I'll beat him this time.
Totally.
And like, I'm gonna do all of those things again, but like, I'm gonna try and get it right this time, rather than like, you know, talking to Emilia, trying to understand her and like the situation of the world that he's in.
Because he hasn't learned the right lessons from what happened before. He doesn't need to pick the right action. He needs to be better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we get another reset soon. But who knows where it will be.
Yeah.
Or when it will be. Curious to see what he does with that.
As we've stated, the episode ends with Rem dying. So, like, Subaru isn't going to stand for that. So, like, probably he's going to, like, reset the board next episode or whatever. But one thing I noticed about this episode, like, Subaru looks so tired. They do, like, a great job of, like, making him look just fucking done.
Yeah, for real. Even the way he interacts with people, he's like lost a lot of his energy.
Well, when you pile up like the trauma that he experiences at the end of the episode and another death, like there have to be some like cracks in his psyche, right? There have to be like some wounds that have not even healed yet.
And you can kind of see that, like, when he goes to the village and he, like, walks around and he kind of sees the dead bodies, but he doesn't really see them at first until he, like, something clicks in his brain. Like, the guy is traumatized. He's in absolute shock.
Mm-hmm.
There's the scene where Subaru and Rem are staying in the inn together.
That's
where you really see like just how hard Rem has fallen for him. Really feel for her.
It's really set up for some big hurts, some big pain. Yeah. Like,
especially because earlier in the episode, I didn't mention this before when I did the summary, but during Subaru's training, he collapses or gets tired, passes out or whatever, and when he wakes up, his head is resting in Rem's lap.
Yeah.
Which is something she would have seen Emilia doing to him, right?
Yeah.
In the past. So she knows what it means to him. She knows that it's a nice thing for him. But she also knows that she must know that he loves Emilia, right?
Uh-huh.
She's just doing what she can.
Yeah, well, I think in a way, with Emilia out of the picture, in air quotes, Rem sort of wants to be the new Emilia as well. She's like, she's that smitten. I mean, she'd never like plot or manipulate for that, but like she does know. Oh, Subaru liked it when Emilia did this for him. I'll do this for him now.
And then in the inn, neither of them can sleep. So she comes into his room and she cuddles him a little bit. She like heals him while she's cuddling him and puts him to sleep. And she says nice things to him. And he's like, I don't know if he's being oblivious or if he can tell. Like when she puts her arms around him, he kind of blushes and he's like, oh, what are you doing? He must know, right? He must get it.
I mean, he can be pretty single track. Minded like when he wants to be like
that's true,
single-minded, one-track mind.
But my interpretation was that when Rem was like putting her arms around him and healing him, she was also putting him to sleep a little bit because he suddenly got real sleepy.
Yeah,
Is she doing that on purpose, or is it just like a nice sleepy feeling to have your gate healed? I don't know what that'd be like. Healing. Yeah.
I do think that like she's using some sleepy time magic on Subaru there. In the same vein, I've said earlier, Subaru is like constantly rejecting help from people throughout the episode, right? Yeah. Krush like mentions Subaru's gate being healed by Felix, and then Subaru has like this quick flashback to being healed, which involves just being hugged by Rem and Felix at the same time, which sounds fantastic. But he's like struggling against him. Like, what is that about?
It's like his head is in Rem's boobies. His face is in her boobies. He hates it. Why?
Yeah, I don't know. Just repelled by the idea of being helped by others and like having his weakness being put on display. I guess I'm not sure.
Yeah, I wonder.
Yeah, I want my gate healed.
And while she's healing his gate, Rem says some things to him, like, "You just need to talk to Amelia, and because you're such a wonderful person, I'm sure everything will be fine. But like, please save some of that for me," or something like that. Yeah, she definitely gets what's going on, but she's trying to also get hers while she can.
Yeah, she's very much aware that she's the second string waifu in this arrangement, unfortunately. And then she decides to pack her stuff up and like leave ahead of him, presumably, like shit sort of like hit the fence. She got like another signal or something, and she was like, "No, Subaru can't get involved in this at all."
It definitely seemed that way, or like, maybe she'd already decided that's what she was going to do. Like, she really tried to discourage Subaru from taking this trip in the first place. She knows what level of wrong is going on. Like, when they're in the carriage together or in the car or whatever, and they're talking about it, Subaru asks her, like, "Have you heard anything else from Ram?" And she says, "No, I mean, it seems like the distress signal was out of her control because something so bad had happened that she couldn't control it, when really she didn't. Ram doesn't want to be signaling us because she wants you to stay there," or something like that. So Rem knows how bad it is to a degree. And she probably just doesn't want Subaru getting involved, like getting hurt. She knows he pushes himself. She knows he's not fully healed. She cares for him very deeply. I wonder if she planned all along to just ditch him at an inn.
Yeah, and like run headlong into danger herself. Like, what could be going on?
Yeah, and it must have been bad because she got beat.
Yeah. Like, there's a whole village worth of slaughter happens. And like, in this really evocative moment, Subaru is like surrounded by a whole bunch of hooded folks who we know to be like the witch cult people. And they like, they bow to him. And then they sort of like disappear into the night. That was creepy.
That was creepy. That's like when he like pays some guy to drive him most of the way there, and the guy won't drive any further. So Subaru's walking, and hooded black figure with like glowing red outlines, and then suddenly he's in a circle of them. So they're all like looking at him, and they don't hurt him. Yeah, and then they just fly off into the night. Yeah, that was cool. Stunning. And like the implication was, right, from Krush and Felix, that there may be people who want to hurt Amelia because they don't want a half elf to be in the royal selection or whatever. This is the work of her enemies. But perhaps it's just something else going on with the witch.
Seems that way, right? With the way that they're like behave towards Subaru, and Rem is stabbed with a knife, a knife that we've seen in the hands of like these witch cult people from the flashback to Rem and Rem's childhood.
Yeah, it's all kind of coming together, isn't it?
Yeah, it's things are going to get interesting. I'm like excited to watch the next couple of episodes. I personally would also like to see more of Fiddix and Krush-sama. They're a real enjoyable duo in this episode. I gotta give a shout out to Krush in her casual attire, like top tier.
And Fiddix like shames her outfit. Like, you're dressed too sexy for a drink at the bar.
Yeah. She's the gender joker. This is I think we're gonna see more of that. But like, it's just what I like about Fiddix is like, she or he is just very much entertained by like the confusion that that their appearance like evokes in people, and like is constantly making these ironic statements about what a man should be, or like men are wolves, or good men should take advice. Like I like how she's like Crew, she's like pouring herself like an amaretto or whatever, and Subaru is like, "I can't drink," and she's like, "Oh, well, drink water then, bitch."
Yeah,
just I love drink
that,
water.
Yeah. It's like, I'm not gonna drink enough to get drunk anyway.
Yeah. This is just a nightcap. This isn't what you think it is. One of my notes says, Krush-sama, mommy dumb, but why is mommy dumb?
She says some cool stuff to him about, like, he asks her about herself, I think, and she says something like, her family is gathering people and objects in response to an occurrence.
Mm-hmm,
that's kind of cool. That's like hinting at some interesting stuff going on, right?
Yeah.
What's that about?
Yeah, she's clearly like a very, very industrious person, and has like a whole network at her disposal. You know, she's got Fiddix, she's got Wilhelm, and like just a whole bunch of other shit behind the scenes that we don't know about.
Yeah.
She's also been getting a lot of marriage proposals, etc. It seems. Yeah, and it dawns on Subaru that like Emilia would probably also be getting those.
She asks him if that upsets him, and he kind of like looks down, and then she gives him this speech about how stupid it and bad it is to look down. What can you do by looking downwards, she says.
Yeah, like I said, people are just like naturally just like Subaru for whatever reason. And it seems Krush does too. But at the same time, she is like an industrious and forward-thinking like a queen candidate, or like dragon priestess candidate, I should say.
Yeah.
And this guy, along with Emilia, are her competition, and she doesn't want to like underestimate them or take them lightly. So it's also a little bit for her own sake that she says, you know, chin up, Subaru. You're a more formidable opponent than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She wants to help him in her own way. But Subaru just sees Subaru just sees them as coming after him, being out to get him. And like in turn, Emilia as well.
After this, when Rem gets her like magic signal from Ram, and they're like talking with Krush and Fiddix about like heading back to the mansion, the Roswell mansion, Krush says to him that if you go, then you're now my enemy.
Mm-hmm.
She has a contract with Emilia that she takes very seriously. To heal Subaru, and if he leaves, he's breaking that contract, and she doesn't have to protect him anymore. And Subaru takes this to mean that she doesn't want him to go because she doesn't want him to help Emilia, because Amelia's her competition. Yeah, he makes everything about like what is and isn't good for Emilia, and all of it's like in his head.
And Krush isn't like the best at communicating this. This humor. She is like a certain way of speaking is very like formal, and like it's reflected in her attire as well. When she isn't wearing her chill casual outfit, she's in like a military. What looks like a dressed like a general, right? So she seems very, very matter of fact, very straightforward. And she says, like, if you leave here, you're in breach of contract and I can't help you anymore. When what she really wants to say is, or this is how I see it, what she really wants to say is, I want to help you, Subaru. Yeah. Stay here, get better, then we can figure out the stuff with Amelia. But if you leave... fuck you, Den. I am not going to like put more into this relationship than I'm getting out of it.
Yeah,
you know, she's ready to like drop Subaru if he's not behaving, if he's not like meeting her halfway,
and
which is smart.
yeah, absolutely. And like, I think, is it Felix does even say that, like, or even like, you should just stay here and heal for a couple of days, he'll probably be fine, just chill, please stay. But you know, he's incapable of like listening to anyone who knows anything about what's good for him or right for him. You wonder if this is like maybe a part of his personality that he's ported over from the real world. Like maybe he feels like nobody actually does have his best interests at heart, and only he knows what's good for him.
Yeah, no wonder what could have brought that on. But I feel like these scenes also really serve to give us an idea of the relationship between Krush and Felix, which is one I'm interested in exploring some more. You know, what what Krush is unwilling or unable to say, Felix very much like... is willing to say, and like does say it, even though Krush is like, nope, you don't have to say anything. And then Felix is like, no, actually, I will.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, I love that scene.
Some interesting nugs going on in this ep.
Right? Just myriad smokable nugs. Just hella nugs to put in your pipe.
Smoke of the nugs.
Yeah, it's a stray observation here. I like Otto. He seems like a very instantly likable character, even though he has like a couple of minutes of screen time. He's like carting Subaru around. He's like muttering to himself. Yeah. And Otto is like, oh shit, he's insane. Oh shit.
Yeah.
Invited a fucking wacko onto my dragon cart.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah, that was funny, yeah. He's got a funny hat.
Yeah. Yeah, he's cool.
Do you have any other thoughts about what things that happened in this ep?
Yeah, I suppose there's that one scene where Subaru is hanging out at the in front of the big old sign with all of the candidates on it, and he meets
in the city.
Yeah, he meets the APA dealer again, and like they have some half elf rights discourse, which is kind of goofy.
The APA dealer turns out to be a half elf prejudice racist.
The fantasy racism, it's a bit goofy, and I wish we had just a little bit more to work with. Like if there was like other half elves beside Amelia, if we had like a sense of that, that would be good.
But it seems she's the only one we've seen, right?
Yeah. So do all half elves have silver? It seems perhaps that like not all half elves have silver hair. Like are they discriminated against?
Yeah, or just the silver-haired ones, maybe.
Yeah.
Apavenda says there's no way anyone will let Amelia be the ruler, because everyone's scared of the witch. Rile Subaru up again.
Yeah. It's sort of like a real circular discourse at this point. I'd love to see some more about that, but we'll see, I suppose.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, and also we need to learn more about the witch, like, because that is like the apple dealer's like only like real rebuttal is like, oh, you must not know about the witch. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You'd be singing a different tune if you did.
Yeah. I mean, we've got very little information about her so far, right? Like, there was that fairy tale or a story that someone told. I can't remember.
No. If you recall, actually, like, Subaru brings up a story about the witch, and then Rem is like, no, I'm not, I don't want to talk about that.
It doesn't, I can't remember her name, the...
Oh, you're right, yeah.
The girl Beatrice. In the library. Beatrice, yeah, doesn't she give him a little bit of info? She says something about how there was, like, a few witches, she killed them or something.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's all we have so far. We don't know about anything else she did.
Yeah, we need more eps.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good place to call it, I think, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Okay, so in that case, shall we move on to some closing thoughts?
Let's do it, yeah.
Do you want to go first?
Sure. First of all, I'm digging this new format. Mm-hmm. I think we've definitely got to get deeper into the episodes and like connect our thoughts a bit more easily.
Sure.
And as such, I think I can keep my closing thoughts nice and brief. Yeah. These are some really heavy episodes, and they're like painful and exhausting, and they're like so many times that I wanted to like reach into the screen and like throttle Subaru.
I know,
But it's the pain of like of recognition of like seeing myself in this stupid cringe character who rebuffs the help of others, thinking that he like knows better, and makes things about himself. I think we can all place ourselves in this guy's position at one point or another, and that's what makes this so relatable and so painful as well. This is definitely the episode that like that elevated ReZero from like a good anime to a great anime for me. Mm-hmm. I think Subaru and Amelia's chat at the end of episode 13, it just punches so damn hard. Yeah, this is like where the rug pull is sort of like, I mean, we've had the rug pulled out from under us a couple of times of like some tonal shifts and like some genre shifts, but like I think very definitively these episodes want to say this is not an isekai about wish fulfillment, about having your dreams come true in another world. It's an isekai that wants to hold a mirror up to its audience. That's the ambition that it states in these three episodes. Whether it like succeeds in doing that remains to be seen. But like here, it very definitively says this is what we're going for. Look closely at yourself, you dirty weeb. You may think you're the hero of your story when actually you're like hurting the people around you and pushing them further and further away. Maybe this is why you never get out of the house. Maybe. Yeah. Subaru like just grows in complexity. He shows himself to be like fallible and weak and not up to the challenges that are posed to him. And his strengths are not as evident as with other anime heroes. His strength is his humanity, like and his willingness to show us the audience, like just the darkness of his thoughts. Of like he like really, as I said, he's like contemplates suicide in this episode and becomes such like a shocking and a provocative idea within the context of this show, but Yeah, yeah. Subaru's strength is like showing us like who we are. He's the isekai protagonist, mirror image, the bizarro Tsukasa. Yeah, and much like Subaru, we have so many people in our lives that care about us, even if we continually fail, even if we fuck up time and time again, and like it's asking the question like, how would you respond? What would you do? And that's what makes this interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, this is the point where I find this anime is something else. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited to get to the next ones.
Yeah, yeah, I'm definitely with you there in that. Like, these episodes like matured the anime for me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I started to understand what I think it's about. So, you know, shows have a plot and then they have what they're really about often. And I think this like helped me understand a little better what they're trying to do, what they're trying to say, and it's frustrating watching Subaru make the same mistakes and like have so little self-insight. And just constantly hurting everybody around him. It was cathartic to see that come to a head in his conversation with Amelia, in that conversation at the end of episode 13 or whatever it was. He finally gets called on his shit, which doesn't happen quite often. You have a lot of shows where you have a male protag who's exactly like Subaru and treats the female protags in the same way, but they never get called on it like Amelia called him on his shit. So it's cool to see. I'm looking forward to whatever comes next, perhaps the next reset, the next return from death, who knows. And also very cool to get a glimpse into the wider world a little bit more, like learn a bit more about what the role selection is. Like, lots of stuff has been building up towards this point, it feels like, or at least this next point.
Yeah, you make an excellent point. I'm just trying to think of if you put like another anime protagonist in Subaru's shoes and they did what Subaru did, like challenge Julius and like come to Amelia's aid even when she asked him not to. I'm like, they would be praised, they would be successful, and like everyone would like fucking love them. It's kind of hilarious, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I was thinking, what if Goku was in Subaru's shoes? But then I thought, oh well, then Chi-Chi would still like fucking harangue the shit out of him, like still hate his ass.
Chi-Chi has every right to hate him though, because she doesn't get a kiss.
What is kiss?
Chi-Chi gets no kiss.
I don't get it. What is kiss?
For God's sake, man, you're married.
I know, Goku, nice. Like, what is kiss?
Goku's the opposite of a wife guy, even though he's married.
You mean Goku's based? Goku's just wrong, the normal never man. Kiss. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's got two King children, shit. Three children.
King
he's got
shit.
Two children. Yeah. Okay. He fought, but no kiss. Well, this just took a turn.
Of course I'm not wrapping it up, Chi-Chi.
We don't kiss. What's the point? So that was episodes 12 to 14 of ReZero, Starting Life in Another World. Next time on Reincarnated as Podcasters, we will discuss episodes 15 to 17 of ReZero. We hope you enjoyed listening. See you in the next life.
Bye bye. We'll be right back.
not go back. Let the good 記憶のすなめば得た思いまでね。こんなに焼けなく消えてしまうの。I wish I was there. Oh, please don't let me.